Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 166. I'm Steve Borshon with the ever amazing Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
The powerful and strong Graham Thickens.
Wait for it.
And the brainiac Phil Wilson. I had to be nice to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, brainiac. That's pretty
there you
much
go.
Me. That's me in a nutshell. Sure. Yeah.
Does he hang out at the Brain Exchange? That's what R.T. Ryback calls the Grain Exchange area now, is the Brain Exchange.
Well, that's actually nice. Pretty cool.
It's got a ring to it, you know?
Yeah.
And now the High Tech Association's moving in down there. So, you know, it's getting to be quite the cluster or whatever.
Minivate World Headquarters, is that going to be down there soon?
Sure, we have our membership. I'm about the only one that's ever in there, though. You guys are hardly ever down there.
When I pay every month for an office, it's hard to tear away and get down there.
And I can't wear my jammies there, so.
Yeah, well, I get there mostly for events and meetings, but it's great. I love getting in there. It seems like I'm there at least once a week.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Call me crazy, but I still like the St. Paul location better.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's homier. I'm sorry. It's warmer.
Yeah.
It is. There's no question, but it's I think St. Paul is going to do a lot better once the light rail is finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because now it's just kind of a pain. But boy, I tell you, when people can just step off the train and walk a quarter of a block to the St. Paul location, I think it's going to do quite well.
I don't think they have to walk a quarter of a block. I think you just get off the train and they're there.
Well, it stops at the corner, so you got to move a few feet to get there.
Well, and the station is done. It looks great, but of course the trains won't actually be running for almost a year and a half yet, or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, but it'll
so have
be
you guys great. Heard somebody was talking about Wi-Fi, U.S. Internet having a Wi-Fi system set up in the light rail? You guys heard anything about that?
Mm-mm.
Okay,
no, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
I heard it from one guy, and I have nothing to verify it. It's just. Totally rumor.
Some drunk on the train.
That's right. That's
Wi-Fi. Yeah. Exactly. Hey, Graham, so SaaS camps, the software as a service camp that Leif Larson spearheaded, that was at Coco MSP, right?
The Grain Exchange? Yeah, that was a week ago today.
And how was that?
It was awesome. I mean, I couldn't believe that Leif would spend as much time as he did preparing and offering that seminar workshop, really, for his software colleagues in town. I mean, he charged a modest fee for it, so obviously a couple hundred bucks, but it was well worth it. There were, I don't know, maybe 20 people there, if that. And, it was an all-day affair, and I got to sit in on a portion of it in the morning and a portion of it in the afternoon. And I did post on Minovate about it,
right,
including all the topics that he covered, which was extensive. I mean, he presented a lot of really valuable data, industry data. And more than that, he uncorked his own knowledge and lots of great stories about how he's built his business and the challenges and pitfalls that he's been through. So there were a bunch of up and running SaaS companies that participated, or shall I say up and running software companies that are going SaaS, know they have to go SaaS, but really need help in figuring out how they do this, you know. So Leif told me he really did it as kind of giving back to the community, and he spends so much time with other entrepreneurs. It's amazing. And, this was another example of how he really is so generous with his advice and time.
Yeah. Well, now, just out of curiosity, were there any hosting providers there from the Twin Cities?
You know, that's a very good question. Why weren't there? I did not see one, no. And I know most of them. Now, I got there late, and I didn't get to meet everyone that was there, but I could pick out some faces I knew. And there was one company there that was something to do with geographic information systems, GIS. And I know there's a company up in St. Cloud, a big company that does that up in St. Cloud, but I wasn't really sure who everyone was. David Quimby was there, and Neil Tovson from Telemetry Web, who hangs out in Cocoa, you know, that's his home base. And he was a Project Skyway company. But the other folks I didn't really get a chance to meet. But yeah, why weren't the hosting companies there?
Aren't a lot of these apps built on top of like Amazon Web Services?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Rackspace's offerings, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, so maybe there just isn't the kind of services available locally that compete with Amazon or Rackspace.
Well, you know, they did talk about using data centers for, commercial data centers, hosting companies, and they talked about compliance issues and the so-called SaaS 70, SaaS, which has nothing to do with software as a service. It's a designation in the data center industry for certification of a data center for security and compliance reasons. And so they talked about that, and it's entirely possible that these local companies could use a local hosting service like Visi or IP House. I mean, they would certainly have that option. And some of these companies feel a lot more comfortable knowing their data is in Minnesota and not, you know, in some far-flung server somewhere that they might not even know what jurisdiction it's in, you know.
But the interesting thing about that is that when you listen to people then talk about the requirement really to have a content delivery network as part of this, and then if you look at the fact that Amazon has redundancy in terms of where their data centers are located, and you can have your app served from just one location, East Coast, West Coast, whatever, or you can have it from both. There's some real advantages to using a national, international kind of player.
But yeah, there are. And this is something that they all have to weigh. And, you know, Leap didn't spend a lot of time on infrastructure. I was there during that segment. And Neil Tovson knows a lot about that, having come out of a company called Concur that was acquired by Jelco. And so he knows a lot about that big infrastructure, you know, certification, compliance space. And it's a huge issue for many, for particularly, obviously, if you're in healthcare or finance, you know, financial services, it's the infrastructure questions are huge. And but you know, that wasn't the main purpose of the workshop. It was trying to cover a lot more ground than that. So it was a very good event. I'll put in the link to my post on it.
Well, and then the MHTA Spring Conference occurred on Wednesday, and Phil, Graham, you and I, you guys and I were at that event. Mm-hmm. And Phil, what are your thoughts about it?
Well, you know, I enjoyed, the sessions that I went to were fine. I was somewhat I'm not sure I dug the opening keynote. I'm not saying that it was bad. I just didn't know if it was necessarily appropriate for the event. I would have loved to heard more from Governor Dayton myself, other than, hey, how you doing? Have a great day. I would have liked to heard more about his tech initiatives and STEM and that sort of a thing. So I felt like we got more about your brand as opposed to, you know, what's really happening in high tech in Minnesota.
And for those that don't know, the keynote was by Rick King, who's the chief operating officer at Thomson Reuters down in Eagan. And it was about personal brand, and it was about his use of social media internally. And what's interesting to me is what I really wanted to hear at the outset of the event were some stats about Minnesota.
I agree.
You know, so we've talked about this before about the fact that there were, you know, 55,000 people in printing and publishing back in the 90s, and there's now less than 20,000. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? You know, everybody talks about the Twin Cities being a hub of creatives and the creative class on a global basis. Okay, so what does that mean? Can we quantify that? Mm-hmm. So where are we in terms of startups? You know, what is that doing in terms of job creation? You know, those kinds of things. That's what I really wanted to learn.
Yeah, kind of the state of tech in Minnesota.
Yeah, and we didn't really get any of that. Now, I did not stick for the closing keynote, so I can't tell you if maybe that was covered, but I felt very much like, okay, well, this is, you know, okay. I mean, it's, I got it. All right, sure. But, you know, that was it. I mean, I didn't walk away going, boy, that was really great to know. I'm glad to see that we're doing this, and we're glad that we see we're doing that. And, I will continue to go to the event. I'm glad that I think that they're making great strides in making MHTA a little bit more relevant to the tech space. But I need to hear more back on that. I know maybe rattling off stats and talking about STEM funding and talking about investing in tech enterprise, and maybe that's all boring stuff, but I want to know that stuff when I walk away from an MHTA meeting.
Yep, I would agree. Well, one positive sign was Margaret's announcement that she did that from stage early on, I think, wasn't it? Or was it after the keynote? It might have been right after the keynote, announcing they're moving to the Grain Exchange building.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, that's fine. Let me finish.
The point is, they're going there to be closer to where the action is. And what's the action? Startups. And I've been harping, and many others have too, for years, I think, that it isn't in touch with the startup community, that organization. And they're trying supposedly to change that. Tom Kiefer, the chairman of the MHTA board, it's a personal, initiative of his. And so they are doing things to try to get, and I admire them for that. And I think just physically moving there, you know, is a good sign and will help move that along. And we were talking with Grigsby afterwards, and he was saying there is some sort of a tiered pricing level that, you know, that's supposedly more friendly to smaller firms to belong to MHTA, but it's still largely a big company organization. But I don't know if there's really startup friendly pricing yet.
Well, that's the thing, Graham. I mean, you could make the same argument saying that there's an incredible tech community in med tech, and that's really not happening at COCO. That's happening in the Medtronics and you know, around the city. So, you know, maybe moving somewhere closer to those. I don't know. But, you know, again, and I think it's wonderful that they are moving. And I think anytime that you can get them in, you know, collaborating distance. And again, they're making some great strides. But for the conference, give me some stuff. Give me some meat. I kind of learn more from a Mojo meeting than I do from that. So.
Yeah. Well, a couple of my thoughts on it was I didn't particularly like it being down in the sub-basement this year.
The plane hangar. Yeah, we were in a plane hangar.
Yeah. And they put the whole huge the big meeting room was in the same room as the exhibits, which has pluses and minuses. But anyway, I didn't care so much for that. And the panels, the breakout sessions, I was largely disappointed with the quality of the content and discussion. I so many of these conferences, and not just MHTA, they end up being sales pitches by people talking about themselves, you know, on the panels, and instead of talking about real issues, I didn't attend a breakout session that really, where I really learned anything, you know, but I did get to the big data one, and, I can't complain about that because I won the iPad drawing.
You did?
Nyok. Yep. The University man of wins St.
A,
Thomas.
Man wins a Kindle and an iPad.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, you were with me, Phil, when I won the Kindle, but you weren't there in the big data room.
Nope.
And the funny thing is, I tweeted my favorite thing about big data, which I stole from one of my analyst buddies. And the tweet was, "It's a shame that little data gets no respect anymore." and she read it from the podium.
No,
she
goes, funny.
Where's Graham Thickens? And she's looking around the room. And I'm like, what did I do? And I'm starting to raise my hand. And she read the tweet and no one laughed.
Well.
And I thought, these guys don't have a sense of humor at all, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
It was mostly big company IT people or something. I don't know. But
well, you know, it's easy to point out flaws and problems with any event conference. Heck, we did it.
Oh yeah, we loved doing it.
But I tell you, MHTA is, again, I believe they are making very good strides in the right direction to really impact the tech community. I want to see some more meat and potatoes when I go to that conference.
Yep. I ran down Margaret in the reception afterwards and congratulated her. I thought it was, a very successful event. I mean, if you look at how many people came out and all the vendors that were there and, you know, the schmoozing and the networking is always one of the most valuable, if not the most valuable part. And I also think they've done a wonderful job with their new website, their new logo. I mean, she's really done a lot in a short amount of time. So,
yeah, no Steve, your thoughts? What did you think, Steve?
Well, so,
because Graham and I are yakking away here.
Yeah, yeah. So it was. I also didn't like the sub basement. It felt less professional.
Mm. Why did they have it down there? Is it the amount of people, or was there some other convention going on?
They said that it was, basically to consolidate everything and keep everything in one area. I don't know if that's the case, but
Very well could be that they just didn't get the room they wanted.
I did a real informal headcount.
Yes.
When we were in the keynote.
Yes.
And there were about 200 people less than there were last year.
I kind of had that feeling too, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So, not that that's necessarily all that bad, but here, it's interesting to listen to what you just said, Graham, about you didn't learn that much in breakout sessions and all of that. I mean, here's at the end of the day, what really matters is people want to go to an event like this to have their minds blown, to have their mm-hmm. To just say, oh my God, thank you for helping me see the light with respect to, how big mobile is or whatever. So when I think about national conferences like the Web 2.0 Summit and Mary Meeker comes and does her Internet Trends presentation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is an absolute, it's like going to war with a 22 if you're here, or going to war with,
a howitzer.
A howitzer, right.
Yeah.
You kids at home, a howitzer is a cannon. Yeah.
but really, at the end of the day, it's all a matter of how can you expose people to the cutting edge about where things are now, where they're headed. What are the trends? I mean, people want to know what the trends are. Not to say, absolutely positively, social commerce is going to be exactly how people buy in the future and 8th Bridge is going to do incredibly well. That's a prediction. That's not a trend. The trend is mobile commerce. The trend is social commerce. What does that mean? How are people doing it? How can you enhance the experience and make it better? Because most people simply use the net now for research on product, or maybe asking people about what they think about, product or service. So it's stuff like that. I mean, how do you go to a session like that where you literally have your horizons raised? Because not only does that benefit business leadership, but it also benefits those who are either in startups or potentially interested in starting up something in a given space.
Well, and it would draw more of the younger companies too. And I, what I was thinking about as you were talking is, yeah, why couldn't they have like a Forrester analyst be a, you know, a speaker about trends? I mean, think about Jeremiah Aoyang or Charlene Lee, who's now with Altimeter Group. They both come to town. They have clients here. And in fact, I saw Charlene a month or two ago at an IBM event downtown. And it would be awesome to have one of them talking about those big trends. And you know, and I don't know that they could speak specifically about how they affect Minnesota, but everybody knows they're going to affect Minnesota too, you know. Right. So that would have been that would be a good addition to that.
I think that's you're exactly right. I think it's the caliber of keynote, the caliber of presentation. If you're going to represent an entire state's technical industry or serve a technical industry, you got to raise the bar.
Yeah,
you got to raise the bar. Yep. And that's not to say that the keynote was a bad topic. I mean, personal brand, which, you know, we used to call reputation when I was growing up. You know, it's a valuable topic, but again. Let's get some stats going.
We're going to get some more stuff going, but I just want to mention one more thing, and this is way out here. But the Mimas Summit this October, the morning keynote is Jane McGonigal. Mm-hmm. And I've seen Jane. She's a really arguably probably the number one game theory and game expert that exists, you know, with respect to social gaming and everything else. I mean, this woman does some pretty amazing things, and I've listened to her talks at various Bay Area events for several years. And then the afternoon keynote is Guy Kawasaki, who everybody knows is the VC and former Apple evangelist back in the early days. And that's the caliber of people that we're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, that can bring really a global perspective to what's happening, and they're obviously doing this with respect to digital marketing, but that's what I want out of MHTA.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what would make people join.
Yep. Yeah. Mima does a great job getting national name speakers in, and they have to unload some dough to do that, but they got a lot of dough too. It's a big membership organization,
right?
Way bigger than MHTA as far as sheer numbers, but yeah, those are great speakers for the fall.
So Tim, I'm curious what you think about that kind of knowledge level and the sorts of things that might create motivation with business leaders with checkbooks to start to drive forward in areas that they may not be driving forward in now.
That's a good question. I don't know. It's. I think one of the things that's holding this area back from producing more breakout startups
is just the knowledge and the understanding what's going on, or the checkbooks.
Yeah. Well, I think it's connected, but I think there's plenty of talent, and it just doesn't seem like you can break out. You have to move to Silicon Valley to really get the kind of support, you know, that's needed.
Yeah. There are some signs of good signs happening, but there's no arguing that the ecosystem out there in the Bay Area, in the Valley, is something we can never have here. I mean, it just isn't going to happen, but you've got to learn how to tap into that, and smart companies do by spending time out there, by raising money out there if they can, and some do, and by attending conferences out there. And, you know, this is what I push my clients to do all the time. And then as companies grow larger, like W3i and Instratus locally, two good examples, they have a presence out there. They're building a presence out there and continuing to build, you know, more people, feet on the ground out there. And that's critical. But we've also had some great inroads with money coming to town, particularly with Code 42. That was the biggest thing thing to happen with that $52 million from Accel Partners. So companies here can raise money from the coasts. It's never easy, but it's happening more and more.
Well, and then to show that the Minnesota creative community, it matters to others. Yesterday we went to the Cube 3D printer rollout, and it was down at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Minnesota was one of the first ones in the nation to get this vehicle to show up. Unfortunately, we stood outside.
It was about a 20 degree wind chill there with that north wind or whatever it was.
But it was fun.
It was that car that they have. Is it a Kia Cube? Is that the kind of car? And they had that thing decked out like I've never seen, inside and out. The guy said he'd driven from L.A., I think. So I don't know if they're housed out in L.A., the roadshow people, but they're going all
social media people will do anything, won't they?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I didn't realize that thing was part of a public company that is based in South Carolina, and it's like a 20-some-year-old company.
Right.
And they literally invented 3D printing, right, Steve?
Yes, exactly. And I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes so people can go look at the video of it. But, you know, the leader in 3D printing from a corporate or enterprise perspective is Stratasys right here in Eden Prairie.
Yep.
And then we have the whole make direction with open source printers. Mm-hmm. And then we have people like this now that have come out with something that looked almost like an easy bake oven.
You slap the plastic
that extrudes into this printer head, if you will, that turns around and melts it and prints it on the... And it just builds the thing up by layers. It's really fascinating. But now we're starting to see new materials. That there was a blog post that I'll find and put in the show notes about somebody that was printing in titanium. Mm. And yes, it doesn't have the same tensile strength as forged titanium or however they make it now. But it kind of gives an idea of where this is all headed, that it's not going to be just sort of plasticky jewelry and toys and stuff like that. It's going to be real stuff. And, you know, Jay Leno in Jay Leno's Garage, which is a web-based show, they actually have a 3D printer there that they can make parts.
For all his old cars,
because you can't find these parts anywhere. And so if they need a Dweebazarb, they can just make one.
I love the Dweebazarb.
I wonder if they can do chrome chrome's a coating, I guess.
It is a coating.
But you know, I was going to say titanium, that's what's used in medical devices. So that you could certainly be making prototype models of medical devices using titanium.
Well, and that's its main direction right now is it's for prototyping, rapid prototyping.
Right. It's obviously not for mass production. But I was going to say, you know what the most exciting material was that I heard the guy say?
Huh.
Chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, I did not hear that.
Yeah, they're moving into candy next, he said. He said that the company really, everybody brings it up if you thought about doing this in some sort of edible food. And he said that that's where they're going next. So.
Well, actually, you know how cool that would be, though, if you had a dinner party and you could put each person's name in chocolate and put it on a plate instead
print out your dessert.
Yeah, I will guarantee you the wedding industry will be buying these things. That's they probably already have them ordered.
Oh, my God, you're right.
They are taking pre-orders and shipping sometime in May. Is the word I got. What are they, $12.99, something like that? $12.99.
For the printer. Yep.
I'm not sure exactly what I would do with it. I really don't know what I would do with it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I could see printing out a couple things, but it looks like it would be like a service bureau opportunity where, you know, you go down to what are they called, FedEx offices now, and it has one down there and you just print out your stuff whenever you want a new iPhone case or whatever.
Yep.
You know? Well, but the big thing will be, I mean, that's truly what you'll do is you'll prototype something on your 300 DPI laser writer back in 1988. But when you want to have a real publication made with four color, you send the files to a service bureau. So that's where it'll go until we can get to a point where you can buy the printers and just print stuff. You know, if you need new glassware for the holidays, you know, you just buy the design online in one of the 3D printing marketplaces, which already exist.
Right.
And you download the designs, and obviously you'd pay for the designs and then crank them out on your own home printer. There's no question that's where it's headed. You know, even Etsy.com, the hand done product marketplace, mm-hmm. Has 3D printed products like crazy. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can look at it.
I was going to say Cubify, whatever the company is called, which escapes me right now. They are definitely targeting this to the home market, though.
And, no question.
You know, the way the guy positioned it is anybody can use this thing. You know, it's not a geek thing like the MakerBot, which costs about the same, but you have to put it together. And if you want it fully assembled, the MakerBot costs $400 more if you want it fully assembled.
Well, and not only that, but I don't know if you've ever watched one of the videos on setup of those devices, and you have to calibrate them, and you also have to level the platform.
It's a lot of dinking around, and there's a market for that, obviously. How many of those have they sold? Any idea? Or
I have not seen any facts. Yeah.
But these guys are going for a mass market, it seems, and we'll see how it takes off. But, you know, in regard to, small service bureaus might use them, but, you know, a serious service bureau would buy a $15,000 Stratasys, wouldn't they?
Of course.
Of course. That's kind of the low end of the Stratasys line, I think, about 15K.
Well, if I had a service bureau, I'd be in the grain exchange building.
You bet.
Yeah. Seriously.
Well, actually, Joseph Reuter had his MakerBot down there in one of those little phone booth rooms. Did you ever see him running it and doing demos for people? Yeah. I was down there once. He had a couple guys in there from Fallon, and Marty Weatherall was there too, and he was showing them how he makes parts right there in one of those little phone booths, you know, those old-fashioned phone booth rooms.
Yep.
Which I guess they set those up so people could go in there and talk on their cell phones and close the door.
Yeah. Or
that's how they're used.
So that's what those are for. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to run out of time here on our show today, boys, but I want to jump to the Google Drive thing. Ooh. And jump to that because all of a sudden there's all of these comparison podcasts and comparison blogs and articles on mainstream tech publications that are now doing A, B, C, D, E comparisons between Google Drive and Microsoft's, is it Live Drive? Tim, what's it called?
SkyDrive, thank you.
Yeah. Dropbox, BoxNet, you know, all these other storage kinds of services. And because I've upgraded my Gmail to 25 gigs, so not only do I get 25 gigs for my Gmail, but they also carved out 25 gigs for my Google Drive. And I thought that was really cool, except for the fact that there's one little piece that I love Dropbox about, is you always could put files into your public folder in Dropbox, and then you could send a link to somebody and they could download it.
Right.
Now you can do that in any of your folders. So even if you have a protected shared folder and you want to still provide a link to a single file within there, you can now send a link to someone. They can download it. So there's just little pieces like that that make it extremely useful. And it's going to be interesting to see what Google does and doesn't do with Google Drive. Have you guys tried it yet?
Yeah. It's Google Drive?
Yeah.
Mine's not ready yet. I must not be high on the priority list.
So,
it's because of your clout score.
Yeah. So that's probably it. Well, more about that. But
I got in right away. The first day it opened up. It took a few hours, but
maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
You know,
I'm not necessarily in a big hurry. I've got Box, I've got Dropbox, I've got all of these things that I can store stuff all over the place. So
you should claim your 25 gigs of SkyDrive too.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, why not?
But no, I think this is, did you see that they replaced Google Docs with this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Google Docs is now Google Drive.
Yes.
Which I find pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, it's you think about it, the Google Docs is taking up space on their servers anyway. Well, why not just make it part of your space on your hunk of the server? So.
Well, but it also makes it a lot easier. If you create a Word doc, let's say, all you got to do is just drag and drop it into your Google Drive, and now it's available on the website on your, just like Google Docs have always been, but you don't have that extra step of having to upload it into Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just little, that's a help. There's no question.
There's some weird behavior that is, it's a 1.0 kind of product. Like you put an MP3 up into the Google Drive, and you would expect it to be at least playable right from the drive. It's not.
Yeah.
If you click on it. No, it's not. You click on it and it will want you to download it, of course, but it's already on your computer. So that doesn't make sense. You would think that any MP3s would immediately be available in your Google Music, but they're not.
Interesting. Has anyone tried, because I've not been able to find anything online. The one thing that would be wonderful is if you could use the Google Drive as some sort of a quasi content delivery network. So you could put a video in there, embed that video on your blog or website, and it would stream directly from there, but it would act like a content delivery network. So it would deliver it fast to anybody anywhere.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So I wonder if anybody's tried that. I have not found anything online about it. But, Google, nobody does it better than them in terms of understanding how to make an internet experience the same or better everywhere. So, interesting. All right.
You should try it.
Yeah. I'll give it a shot.
Try it and write a blog post.
I will.
Yeah. I will. Did you see the just the little dust up about the terms of service on the Google Drive? Did you see that?
Yeah. Well, and for those that don't know, the terms of service are basically that Google has worldwide rights to derivatives and to play it anywhere and all of that. And clearly that's way too open.
Nuts.
But in their defense, if you're in Google Drive and you click on a video and it pulls up inside Google Viewer, that in essence is covered under that terms of service. Or if you, use the file in some other way, you bring it up in Picasa, if you've got images on your Google Drive, then that terms of service covers their ability to essentially replicate and display those photos through Picasa. And that's, in their defense, that's their objective.
Sure.
Is to do that. But, it is kind of troubling to see the sort of blanket wide open sort of thing, mm-hmm.
Yep. Hey, let's, I love the way Tim, labels things when we're talking about what we're going to discuss on the podcast.
I wrote that, by the way.
Oh, you wrote the Best Buy Death Watch? Okay.
No, I didn't. That was Tim. Yeah. That was Tim. Yeah.
That's going to be a regular, that's a regular feature.
That's now a regular feature. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So we've added, the calendar of events, the gang mentality, and now the Best Buy Death Watch.
Right. Yeah, we've got to keep everyone up.
You're such a positive influence.
Well, they gotta make some changes.
Call it a rebirth.
True. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that Pioneer Press piece that the Retail Reporter did over there was pretty good because he was quoting Barry Judge, who'd spoken at an ad event here. I assume it was a local event.
Yeah. Do share.
Yeah.
Share. What is it?
Well, yeah. He has this very crazy idea, but it's also an interesting one, which is what if Best Buy it just becomes this showroom for every electronics manufacturer.
Yeah, but we've talked about that. Well, sure, we have that before. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, he pointed out in the talk that they make more money from the manufacturers than they do from customers.
Right. It's more profitable revenue.
Right. So, I mean, they could lease out space to, say, Samsung and, you know, Microsoft and Dell and everybody, and they can have
a little. We talked about that 3 weeks ago, for God's sake.
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting idea.
It is an interesting idea, and it's very much one of those things that there's like two or three theories floating around of what will save Best Buy. It's either get really big, get really small, or lease out your space, because you've got the one thing you've got going that places like Amazon don't have are in-store pickup. So, you know, you've got locations all over the world.
Same day pickup is an advantage that they would have.
It is a very big advantage.
Yeah. It is a big advantage, but here's my number one issue with all of this, you know, with the showroom thing or getting bigger, getting smaller, whatever, that everything that I've been reading, everything that's being discussed, everything that's being thrown out there, like what Barry Judge threw out, is all about Best Buy and how to make Best Buy better, or how to make, how to cross the chasm with respect to the shift to digital and all of that. And where's the customer? Where's, you know, because what I would see with a virtual showroom is walking around and seeing all of these manufacturers who are paying for space, and they all want to show their wares and show the best stuff. And there might be incentives for the floor salespeople to say, well, you really want to buy this Dell external drive. You don't want to buy that other, off-brand drive over there, even though that's probably a better drive and it would be better for you as a customer. But the attach rates we get comped on, and we really need to sell this one.
And that's different. Yeah. That's different than it is now. How?
No, I, well, because they don't make commission. But yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, it's always that way. But I think that acting as a virtual showroom would just simply accelerate that process.
Yeah, it's almost like they would become like a little mini shopping center business, you know, a shopping mall business where they're leasing out this space. But you know, the interesting thing in that article was that in Asia, something like 40% of the space in department stores is leased out. So in other parts of the world, this is a much more common type of thing than it is in the U.S., apparently.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is they're already the showroom. It's just a matter of they need to make money on it.
Right.
You know, they need to look at just passing that, you know, make up their revenue loss by leasing more space to the vendors. So. To the business.
Well, but leased apartments have been pretty common for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Going back to the days of Dayton's with their electronics department, they used to, lease out space. Then do you remember they had Computer Depot?
And is that
in
is
the
that,
stores? That was always leased out.
You know that because you used to sell into that stuff, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, what we really need to talk about is the important thing this week is everybody's clout score, because clearly that's incredibly important. I don't know about you guys, but in the last 2 weeks, I've heard the words clout brought up, you know, not just from the clout with a K, not the clout with a C, you know, the product clout. And I just, you know, that drives me nuts, and we're all pretty much in agreement that cloud is just a bunch of BS. But I noticed that there is a site now, Klooshbag.com, which is which is a direct stab at cloud, which is, you know, who really cares? But and it basically measures how much of a douchebag you are on social media. So I went through and I did everybody's Klooshbag score, and then I asked you guys to post your clout score, because you have to sign in with make your own profile there. So you guys ready to hear what everybody's clout versus Klooshbag was?
Yeah.
Okay. And I noticed I just spelled
Klooshbag. Hey, wait a minute. I never signed into Klooshbag. So how
You don't have to sign in.
Okay. Yeah.
Clout is
I totally have ignored this whole thing, but
yeah, you know, it's mine. I have a clout score of 38, which is not that great. I mean, I think you have to be
well. The average is 20.
The average is 20.
Yeah, okay, it is great. 38 is good.
It's okay.
But my Klutschbag score is a 51, which puts me in the bit of a douchebag range. Meaning I either don't retweet enough or I retweet too much, or I have too many social apps. So, my social app count is pretty high simply because I always try out these new things. Steve, your clout score, 37.
Mm-hmm.
Klutschbag score, 34. So that puts you in the bit of a prat level of Klutschbag.
And what is
what the hell is a prat?
Oh, come on.
It's a British slang term. And it's,
oh, he's a bit of a prat, a twit, a dink, a dip.
First time I've ever heard that.
It's hard to translate into American English, but it's like you're an ass, basically.
A bit of an ass.
Well, the Urban Dictionary says that it's primarily used in the UK, and the literal meaning is bottom or rump.
There you go.
That's why they call it a pratfall. You fall on your ass.
Yeah.
So is this a British outfit that did this?
I'm not sure.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Let's see. Tim, clout score 30, Klutschbag score 38. So you're a bit of a prat as well. And Graham, of course, the highest clout score here, 48. But he's also got the highest Klutschbag score.
Yay! I win. What do I win? An iPad.
That's right.
So two of us are bits of a douchebag, and then two of us are bits of brats. So
you know, is this
so? What's worse, though?
They both
sound bad.
I think douchebag is just not only are you an ass, but you're an ass that tells everybody how much of an ass you are. So.
Okay.
You know, is this thing really about people with low clout scores trying to belittle people with high clout scores, or what is this all about? I mean, I've been reading, and I don't even read them. I've been seeing scroll by more and more blog posts on why, the myth of influence and why influence is not measured right or doesn't really matter or blah, blah, blah. And they're all putting down clout.
That's the point of Klutschbag is it really doesn't matter. And you can buy followers, you can do all sorts of different things. So really it's a bunch of crap. And pretty much that's why Klutschbag, I think, was started. So.
Well, so what I'll do is I'll put in what I think it was the article from Wired that started this whole buzz, which is what does your clout score really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really ultimately what started the whole discussion this past week. On clout and why it matters and why you need to have a great score and all that. And at the end of the day, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
If you're going to be hired as a community manager, great. Make sure you have a high clout score.
The thing is, if you're a community manager, you're not going to be tweeting or posting on behalf of you. You're going to be posting on behalf of your brand.
Right.
So what the hell does my clout score have to do with it,
Well, brands have clout accounts too.
Yeah, sure.
So I was going to say Ron J. Miller did a session at Minibar on something about the myth of influence, but I haven't had it. I didn't catch it. And he did post his SlideShare deck though, I believe. Ron, R-O-H-N-J-J-A-Y Miller. And he's a smart dude, and he, I'm sure, had a lot of interesting things to say about this. But, clout, when I lost interest in clout? When our friend Phil Hodgkiss left there as chief product officer. He went there, moved to San Francisco, recruited to that position by the CEO, and he didn't even stay a year. And he jumped and he ended up going over to Get Satisfaction in a similar role, which is a much bigger, more established company. But I thought, if he left, why? What did he see that we should know? I mean, I took it as a sign, but, I really don't pay that much attention to what clout says anymore. I get all these stupid notifications and emails, and I don't even look at them, really.
Hey, you can get some free Lipton tea.
Oh, God. Oh, those perks? Those things are a joke. When they started doing those perks.
There's perks now?
Get your tea.
I get your tea, Phil.
I just signed up for Clout today just so I could do this bit.
Well, then go to the perks, and I bet you can get the Lipton tea.
I'm so excited. Ooh, whoopee ding ding.
Hey.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, so, boys, what's coming up in the next few weeks here?
Drupal Camp.
Drupal
is so complicated, they have to have a bar camp over 2 days.
Yeah.
It's actually the 18th and 19th of May.
Wow.
At the U.
Interesting.
Is it a bar camp, free admission, sponsored?
No, $20.
Oh, okay. So,
but you get a t-shirt. Too.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to be heading over there. So, because I use Drupal for one of my clients, so I'll be there scratching my head.
Yeah. You know, I would like to go. I think I'd like to go just to see what the current state of the art is with respect to Drupal.
It's really hard to manage.
Well, it is, and but one of the things that's happening is the creation of what are called distros. So they're, you know, basically packaged Drupal implementations that go after a specific space. You know, so there's a healthcare distro, and there's, you know, distros for media, you know,
So, Steve, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When do you sleep? It seems like you know a little bit about everything.
Well, when he gets up at 5 a.m, he's looking at all this stuff.
Well, I mean, because here's a guy that has absolutely no need to spend any time finding out about Drupal, yet he knows.
Well,
you are like my hero.
I read a lot.
It's a curious mind.
You're my hero.
If I'm not in learning mode at all times, I just get so bored. So I have to constantly be figuring new things out and learning. And it's one of the reasons why I've never been unbelievably wildly successful, because the second I master something, boom, I'm done with it. I'm on to the next thing. And it's like, no, I should really stay there. And
how's your wife feel
get
about
better
this?
At that? I know. Yeah. But you know what though? It is interesting because, You do need. This is what I thought was cool about talking to Robert Stevens yesterday when he was at that MCAD, the Cubify event. Was that, you know, his goal really is to not only be involved in a startup but to stay connected at a very high level with all of these technology companies and really to understand what's coming next. You know, what are the trends? What's coming over the hill?
Yeah, but he's rich. He's got time to do that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
what else is happening? We got Drupal Camp. We've got the predictive and social media analytics in the world of big data on the 21st of May over at Medtronic.
I'm going to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. WordPress. I was going to say that thing's filling up fast. It's a free event, sponsor supported, but they're going to max out at about 400 people, and I'm thinking they're well over 250 already. We need more startups signing up. We've got some in there, but it's largely the big companies right now, but they're trying to get a mix and get more startups in there. So
Are you helping organize this thing?
I am friends with the guys who are co-organizing it, and I helped them secure Robert Stevens as their kickoff keynoter, and I've suggested some other speakers and sponsors to them. But the big companies are really lining up to be sponsors, IBM, EMC, Teradata.
Do you want me to speak on Klushbag? I can do that.
They might have an opening. No, they're still trying to figure out their breakout rooms and how big they can have their breakout sessions. It's a little bit of a challenge at this particular facility, I guess, but they have one big room that can hold upwards of 400 or even more. But it's the breakout sessions. They're still working on that. But go to minianalytics.eventbrite.com and you can read about what they've got so far and see the list of people signing up, which is damn impressive.
It is. I mean, this is going to be an interesting event just from a networking perspective, let alone what one can learn there.
Yep. You know who the latest speaker was that I suggested to him? And I don't know if the guy would even be available. Lee Auden speaking about his new book, which just came out. Optimize. Sounds like a great book. And certainly he could speak to analytics and social media analytics in particular. And that's part of the focus of this event.
Right.
But I don't know if Lee can be available, but it'd be great if he could. He's all over the world speaking.
Okay.
Good.
What else? We got WordPress at the Nerdery. Yep. Correct.
Did you go last Thursday night?
I didn't. I spaced out. I was planning on going, and I just didn't go.
Oh,
totally forgot.
Forgot. People were really upset that you weren't there.
Oh, yeah. So, Steve, you were there.
Okay. No, I didn't make it. Right. Duluth Android Bar Camp. This is cool.
Yeah, I just put it in there because I thought it was an interesting kind of thing. And there's maybe some listeners in Duluth. Who knows?
Oh, Duluth's got a lot happening. I'm going to put the link in the show notes about their collab up there, their co-working space.
I saw that. Yes. Yes.
Oh my God, is that cool? It's right there in Canal Park in that funky old building,
yep,
overlooking the lake. I mean, and the interior really looks nice in there. They got some mojo going on up there in Duluth.
And that's the place you'd want to be if you were going to be down in Canal Park. I mean,
you can check the surf while you're working, for gosh sakes.
Well,
not that you guys care.
You can check the surf while you're working.
Hey, the one of the co-founders of that thing is a surfer on the lake up there. That's how I know him. His name's Jake. So I hope to get up there.
Minnesota surfers, you guys all to get together, what, in the back of a van? You got to be a small group.
They're a hearty bunch.
I would imagine so.
They get together they're in the back of the van shivering. No, they have these heavy wetsuits, and they're out there every day they surf. There are hundreds of surfers in Minnesota, many of them in the Twin Cities that drive up there, you know. I mean, they'll head out at 3 a.m. to get there for a dawn patrol, you know.
You know, and what? I used to scuba dive up there, and I would take a dry suit called a uni suit. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that was exposed was your lips, mm-hmm, and so you'd have long underwear on and the whole thing. And that lake is so cold that I'd come up and my lips would be blue.
Oh yeah.
And I just think, you know, I don't care how fun it would be to surf up there. No effing way, even with a dry suit, that you'd find me out there just lollygagging around in the surf.
They do it.
I didn't know you were a scuba diver.
God. I used to work at Scuba Center on 50th and Penn.
Well, see, there
you
go.
When I was in college, yeah.
Yeah, I used to scuba dive all the time. Jeez, I had no
trips
idea.
All the time. I didn't know that either. Hey, how about that?
Yeah. Of course, now we have no life, so it's okay.
That's right.
You know who's
No, now we have insurance, so they frown on... They frown on things like that.
Scuba divers, Jason Baker, the CTO at Visi.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's a huge scuba diver, goes all around the world. Yeah, talk to him sometime.
Wow. Well, my only regret is not even being able to snorkel on the Great Barrier Reef when we were in Australia, because we just didn't have time to go up there.
Oh, the jellyfish are pretty mean.
That's in my bucket list.
Really?
To at least snorkel.
Oh, wait a minute. It's on your bucket list and you didn't take time to make that happen?
We just couldn't. No.
There's no respect for the bucket list, I see.
No, there's the fact that my wife's trip was paid for by the Fernitex market over in Melbourne, Australia. And we were on a fairly tight schedule, so we didn't have time.
That's one of my hometowns, by the way. Really? I lived in Melbourne from age about 2 to 6.
I love Melbourne. Well, I love Australia. I love the people. My God. We just absolutely fell in love with them. It's just a great place.
Tim loves the wine.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I do right. too. Yeah. Indeed, that's all I drink.
Is Australian wine?
Australian wine?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I'm Aussie, you know? I'm supporting the home country.
Well, you know,
I'm from California.
Some pretty good wine from California.
I drink wine from all over the world. So, you know.
Huh. And I'm from Iowa. So I just drink.
Oh, they have great wine out there.
And I have apple juice from Stillwater. I support Minnesota companies.
That corn wine. Oh, baby.
That just sounds wrong.
That does sound it wrong. Does. So we'll put any other events that we come across on the page along with this podcast on minivate.com. So we probably ought to toddle off, don't you think, guys?
Yep, okay. Absolutely.
Thanks very much for joining us this week. And we'll see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care. Yep.